Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory, all with that Sunbury Motors guarantee, which is so important. Sales staff that works with you, your trade-in's never been worth more. And the outstanding service department. Routine, inspections, diagnostics, they take care of it all. It's one-stop vehicle shopping at the best in the business, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Our play-by-play call of the day.
Tyson Walker off the screen from Bingham. Hall bluffs the shot with three. He spun it in! What a take by Malik Hall.
Jason Benetti and Robbie Hummel last night down at the Xfinity Center in College Park as Michigan State survived and beat Maryland 65-63. Tonight, by the way, Illinois will be hosting Wisconsin, Penn State's next opponent. That should be quite a game tonight at 9 o'clock. All right, Matt, before we get to John Crispin, I guess we have a mystery guest, right?
Yes, we do.
Hey, long-time listener, but frequent caller, not so frequent caller. Congratulations, Mr. Jones, 10 years. It's hard to believe that it was 10 years ago that this all started.
Yeah, and you've been a big part of it, Dave. Appreciate you very much. And to be honest with you, I mean, you know, of the two of us, you're really the survivor. All right, so
so I hear. I know I don't get on the show a lot, but a lot of times I'll be out someplace. Hey, Steve was talking about you on the phone, and I said, well, I hope it was good. All right, and usually it was. So
have I ever said a negative word about the Chief?
No, you never. I've never heard you say a negative word. I appreciate that.
Because it's impossible. All right. And let's, you know, and so like when you're working with the suit and I say all those positive things, I mean, you can think of it as balance.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we're headed to one of our favorite places tonight, Mill Hall, Pennsylvania.
All right. Central Mountain.
Yeah, Central Mountain. And then Saturday, we get to go spend Saturday night in Jersey Shore. So that's, you know, there's places that you go that it seems you can't get there.
Yeah, I know.
So,
well, Mill Hall, of course, that's Robbie Gold's hometown.
Yes, exactly. Yep. That's, yeah. He has put Mill Hall or Lock Haven and Central Mountain on the map big time.
Yeah.
Something besides their great wrestling teams that they have.
And they do have great wrestling teams there. And
sure,
they
got
to go to Jersey Shore. So you got Jersey Shore on Saturday.
Yeah, the Braves are on quite a roll right now.
And I've got to go to Madison.
Madison, Wisconsin. I have driven past the university on my way to Montana many times, taking 90 out through that Minnesota, Wisconsin, South Dakota. And I've often wanted to stop there. And, of course, one of my former students and probably one of the greatest wrestlers, Jeff Walters at Shikellamy, went there. Yep. And so did his brother, who was also a good wrestler. But I never did stop. One of these times, I'm going to have to.
People ask me, where should I visit when I go on a Big Ten road trip? And I said, just for the town? I said, go to Madison. There's so much going on in the downtown area. It really is phenomenal. And to be honest with you, it's one of those, quote, bulletproof areas. I mean, you've got state government and a university there. So, like, they've got a nice deal going there with the economy.
Yep, sounds good.
Hey, absolute pleasure, Dave. You're just one of the great items for me in being a part of this station was I got to know you better, and I appreciate our friendship very, very much.
Hey,
you, sir, are my hero.
Hey, listen. When I tell my son-in-law and my daughter that I saw Steve Jones or I talked to him, they still can't believe that I actually get to do that. I appreciate your friendship also, and it's been a pleasure on my part too.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Right. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time to do this because I know the other guy wouldn't. All right, so. The Chief Dave Ritchie, and I think it's great that his last name is Ritchie because all of us who are around the Chief feel like he has enriched our lives, so that's great. And he and Kevin will have basketball tonight at Central Mountain. Looking forward to that as well. All right, let's stick with the basketball theme. I go from Dave Ritchie, whom I think the world of, to somebody else I think the world of, John Crispin. Johnny, always great.
Yeah, man, look, I am so sorry for missing the show last week. I'm usually a better communicator, but I actually get very calm when handling flight cancellations and bag losses. The problem is I forget about everything else in the world. So my wife also fell victim to this. She thought I was on a plane. She sees me in Minneapolis and says, are you okay? Weren't you supposed to fly out? And I was like, oh, yeah, sorry, babe. I'm stuck here for a little while. So you're in the same category as my wife, if that helps.
Yeah, feeling a lot better. All right. Today is whatever anniversary of what Penn State upsetting Illinois, you said earlier, and Titus Ivory had 27 points. So I went through a litany of what I thought of Titus Ivory. You yep. played side by side, shared a locker room with Titus Ivory for a couple of years. Tell everybody what kind of guy we're talking about as a player and a person.
Well, let me start with this. He's a Penn State guy. My brother Joe and I talk about this all the time. Like, people think you have to get the greatest talent to win at this level. And I always say, well, define great talent, because I think Titus was pretty good. I think Jared Stevens was pretty good.
Yep.
And quite frankly, I think my brother was pretty darn good. But the
yep.
thing was, they all checked the box of being a Penn State guy. And then you say, all right, how do you define being a Penn State guy? And you say, you only know if you know. And I think that's the greatest yeah. compliment I can give Titus Ivory, because he represented a community that we love, a community that felt like a family, a community that still feels like a family. And Titus was one of the best teammates I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, he knew how to push us. He fouled the heck out of me in practice my freshman year.
Yes, he did.
And he said he was teaching me how to play in the Big Ten. And all he taught me how to do was push back harder, mm-hmm. you know. But he was one of those guys. He was genuine. He was sincere. He was inspiring with all the little things he did, and he was motivating with the things that he did on the surface. And I just think we get so consumed with what it takes to win at this level, and I say, well, it takes a few Titus Ivories. It takes a few Tyler Smiths. Did I mention any NBA superstars? No, I didn't. I mentioned guys that are willing to do all the little things. And look, success is merely a byproduct of doing a lot of little things right for the right reasons. That's Titus Ivory. So I can't say enough about the guy. I mean, look, I think Sharif Chambliss, who I just saw a couple weeks ago,
yeah.
was kind of similar in the sense where he's just a
yep.
genuine, sincere dude who makes everybody around him better, even when we're bowling. Do you get what
yeah.
I'm saying? Like, it's
yep.
not about the basketball court. It's about everything around it. It's about the family you create. And, you know, to go back, that is as much of a pain in the butt as I was to our good friend Jerry Dunn, I was a child.
we can just
go with that. I think the 41-year-old version of me would have handled it better.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to go through being a 19, 20-year-old to get here.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry was a big part of that. You know, Jerry built a family atmosphere, and I think that's something that Shrews is trying to do. And part of that process is just get to know where you're at. It's hard. The world has changed. We live in a global world, so we think we have to compete and be like everybody else. We have to assimilate in so many ways. But the reality is, Penn State's different. And the sooner you learn that, the sooner you get to success. And the sooner you start finding more Titus Ivories out there.
I think, that, as you said, it's one of those that when you see it and you're part of it, you know it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And I think we criticize people. We say, oh, you're in a bubble. And I'm like, sort of. It's a pretty darn big bubble. You know what I mean? There's bubbles within the bubbles, and that's understood, but the bubbles within the bubbles never do as well. You know, you really have to understand you represent something. You are there to inspire something that is so much bigger than just Penn State basketball. And frankly, it's bigger than just State College. It's an alumni base that has a genuine interest in seeing something be successful. And I think that was – I hope it's something they can get back to because it's special beyond wins and losses.
Yeah, they're getting there.
Yep.
And Shrews is a big reason why. So when you now watch Micah Shrewsbury's style as a head coach, and obviously you've seen with Matt Painter and so forth what he's mm-hmm. done. What are you seeing with it just stylistically as a foundation?
Well, that's the word, right? I think we get thinking that we want to see this drastic change, and it happens overnight. The reality is if it happens overnight, it isn't sustainable. So what he's doing right now is building those foundational principles, and it's not based on personnel. I think we think, let's see how he can recruit. Like, I don't care how you can recruit. I don't care what numbers a kid has next to his name. If he's the right guy, then it's going to work. If you find good fit guys, it's going to work, so long as your foundational principles are what you adhere to. So what he's doing really right now is instilling foundational principles that allow you to be successful but also sustainable. And the sustainability part is probably the most important piece because that's what recruits itself. When you have a sustainable level of success and you can show a pathway to success in the Big Ten based on simple principles that are tried and true, man, it's not anything. The game is different, but there are a lot of things that still have to be adhered to. He's working on those things. So I think the patience that you have to show is focus on that process, right? I don't want to say trust the process because I think everything is a narrative and it's all rhetoric these days. But the reality is you have to step back and say, all right, what are we building? And you can see it. You can see it's not building with personnel. The personnel comes after these foundational principles are instilled. And I think that's what gives me the most hope for the program right now. But the secondary part of that is Micah Shrewsbury loves where he's at.
Yeah.
Every time I see him, I ask him about his family because to me, mm-hmm. that's the most important piece of being successful at Penn State. If your family gets connected with the local community and you feel a part of that community, mm-hmm. you feel included in youth sports and all these things, you realize you're just another person, but you're someone that they want to root for. Yeah, and I think that's what he's really doing, and those are foundational things that allow you to be successful and sustainable. And then again, the recruiting piece, we talk so much, Steve, about how hard it is to recruit. And my answer is, it's hard to recruit the top 50 kids in the country. It's also expensive.
Yeah.
But you don't need them. You know, mm-hmm. that's not what college basketball is all about. That's not what Penn State's all about. If you right. get them, great. But that's not what's going to make you win, and that's not what makes you a continued winner. So I think they're building the right way. I have all the hope in the world for what Shrews is doing.
Yeah. No, same here. So it's interesting. In college football, you feel like there's more influence of how college football is influencing how they play in the NFL. That's in part because of the quarterbacks. Yep. But in college basketball, it's the way the NBA is playing that I think is influencing college, which is a heavy emphasis on three mm-hmm. layups, free throws. Now, Shrews, there's a lot of things in there, but he, believe me, you have an open two, you take an open two. That's part of it. What are you seeing that across the country, and what in terms of the games you're seeing up close? And if so, what do you think of it?
I think I see it on the surface, but I don't see it at the core. And somewhere in between is a disconnect. And the disconnect, ultimately, to me, because I'm probably more of a philosopher than I am an analyst. I mean, I love Lenardi's book on bracketology, but right now I'm into Kant's groundwork for the metaphysics of morals because it tells me more about people.
Right.
And I think we're at a point where you need to understand people and motivations. The reason why it looks like the NBA on the surface is because that's where everybody wants to go.
Right.
And in so many ways, coaches have to show that they can create a pathway to the NBA by being a part of your program. But the reality is the game's different. Right, skill is different. Mm-hmm. Feel is different. You have to, as a coach today, you have to create an environment in practice and in games that facilitate the development of feel. It's not there. Kids play AAU, and it is haphazard at best. I mean, no offense to Memphis, but it looks like Memphis.
Right.
You know, where it is just a bunch of guys, you roll the balls out, and you go play. That doesn't work. You know, you have to show that you're willing to play that style, that three and dunk and get to the foul line, get mm-hmm. downhill style.
Yep.
I always say it used to be inside out, now it's outside in.
Right.
You get outside in to get inside out, right? It's the drive and kick style. Mm-hmm. But the difference between the NBA ultimately is the rules. The rules are different.
Right.
The paint's wide open because it has to be.
Yep.
It'll by rule. I think we're closer to the European game, and I think the teams that figure that out and look at the European action, the way Europeans use ball screens, because the rotations defensively are different. There's someone in the paint. So you have to study the rotations of European professionals, guys that do have feel. They have feel because they don't have the same skill and they don't have the same athleticism as the guys in the NBA and, quite frankly, some of the guys in college basketball. So they have a much better feel and understanding for how to play the game and less wins because they know how to play. So I think there are teams out there that have realized that the game is more, you know, European and international than it is NBA. Yet on the surface, we like to say it's NBA because that's what the kids want. So I think the best guys out there, no one likes the term manipulate, but I think the best coaches out there manipulate a lot. I think they manipulate the game, and maybe it's more on the side of influence. They manipulate players to play a certain way based on their motivations, right? The, the John Wooden pyramid was 2D.
Right.
The pyramid I see today is 3D. It's got four sides. Everybody has different motivations, but the goal is to get everybody working towards the top. Doesn't matter how you get there. Doesn't matter what motivates you to do the things that you do. You have to speak to their individual motivations. The hope is that common goal keeps us on, you know, keeps us on path and gives us the chemistry we need. I think the game has gotten challenging, man. It's hard. I think you see the personalities. It's tough. The influences outside of the court. It's tough. But you have to show that NBA game on the surface, when in reality there's still a control aspect of college basketball. Partially because, if I'm really being real and, you know, psychological with this, the coaches are the highest paid guys out there. I think where you'll see the change is some of these big NIL schools where the players are making more money than the coaches. That's where you're really going to start to see maybe the training wheels get kicked off a little bit more and the freedom goes to the player.
Which is interesting. In watching the Big Ten this year, a guy like Jaden Ivey sticks out to me, and the Branham kid from Ohio State sticks out to me. Why? Because of their athleticism. I know the Big Ten is called in a certain way, and the big man exists in the Big Ten, but I think when they get to the national tournament, it's the maybe good athletes versus better athletes, and I think that's where they may run into a wall.
Yeah, but doesn't it feel like football?
Yeah.
I mean, where you start to say, you know, SEC athletes, SEC athletes, the game is just faster. I think that's what's been holding the Big Ten back. You know, we talk about it every year. Look, you know my brother. If my brother had his way, he'd score 190 points.
I know
you
that.
You know what I mean? Like, it's play fast. And the reality is you don't have to be the greatest athlete to play fast. I think the freedom of movement component needs to be controlled. You know, the physicality needs to be consistent with what you'll see in postseason play. I think the advantage Purdue has right now is the fact that they're playing to score.
Yeah.
The vulnerability is that they're not the defensive team that they used to be. Now, that's something that they can correct, but the fact that they're able to get up and down the floor and score with anyone, I think it gives them an advantage in the NCAA tournament, whereas most teams typically, you have to compete in the Big Ten, which means you have to adapt to the conference. Brad Underwood did it.
Yeah.
You know, they were trying to play fast up and down the floor, and then they're like, we can't do that without a big. Let's get Kofi Coburn in here. We got Kofi Coburn. And now you adjust to your personnel because your personnel gives you the best chance to win in the Big Ten.
Okay.
I mean, you've got to balance the two. I think Purdue is right now on another level where they're able to score with anybody in the country, and they need to clean up their defense, which is clearly something they can do.
Right. Well, this is what they also needed to do. They also have to have the killer instinct in close, because what's happened to them in the last 6-7 minutes of games, Penn State took the lead with them with 3 minutes to go here. But that's not atypical of what's happened with Purdue. They'll be going along, and then boom, somebody catches them. And Ohio State tied them yesterday after being down 18.
So the question is why, right?
Yeah,
the coach would say, "All right, well, why? What is it?"
If I knew that,
two bigs that you play through.
If you play through
two bigs,
right?
So end a game situation. Who's your guy? It needs to be Jaden Ivey, and they haven't really established that yet, because he's just a piece. He's one of the greatest pieces in the country. I think he's one of the top 10, top 15 players out there. But that's not who they are. So they're going to have to adapt to that and find that guy down the stretch where you can run sets. You can run action that gets Jaden Ivey free, and he becomes your guy. Because, again, we had the luxury of Joe Crispin. right?
Mm-hmm.
We had the luxury of Joe Crispin. We knew who was going to have the ball in late game situations. He might not shoot it,
yeah.
although 9 times out of 10 he is, let's be honest. He might not shoot it, but we knew who had the ball.
Right.
And they haven't figured that out yet because it can't be your bigs who you've been playing through the whole game.
And yesterday, who hit the three to win it?
Jaden Ivey.
Case closed.
There you go.
And so is this interview. It's always great to talk with you, my friend. Appreciate you very much.
My pleasure, man. Hey, anytime, unless flights get canceled and I just lose sight of human beings. So my apologies again.
I don't even think twice about it. It's me, for goodness sakes. You know that. You know that. It's me. Don't worry about it.
Oh, man. No, you deserve better. You've made a lot of my bad performances sound good.
Hey, 73-69, yet 26. I'll never forget that. All right.
I'll take it.
In Rupp. Thanks, buddy.
That's right.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Take care, Steve.
John Crispin. By the way, former Penn State GA Joe Brady, back in the NFL, he's going to be the quarterback coach for the Buffalo Bills. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Can't ask for better new inventory than that. Best in pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, and your trade-in's never been worth more. They'll do everything they can to get you the best deal. And a fabulous service department, from inspections to the routine to diagnostics, they do it all. It's one-stop vehicle shopping with the best in the business, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Matt is thrilled with the Washington Commanders. No? Red Wolves, by the way, was very popular with the fans, but here's the problem they kept running into. They kept running into copyright. And that's what they kept running into. Arkansas State has the right on it. Remember, Tennessee Chattanooga tried to do it, changing the moccasins to the Red Wolves, and Arkansas State stepped in and said no. Since they have the copyright on it, they didn't want to run into that. And there's the Timberwolves in the NBA, and they didn't want to run into that as well. So they wanted a unique brand, and they came up with the Washington Commanders. At least now, instead of calling them Woofed, we can call them the Commanders. All right, let's get back to basketball. Ken Pomeroy, KenPom.com, vital to what we do in our work when we research games. Welcome, sir.
Hey, Steve. Great to be back on the program.
Yeah. It is amazing. Dick Girardi and I, it's an important part of our pregame prep. And we've talked about how you got into it. When you look at numbers, what numbers are important to you that you look at that helps shape your idea about a team numerically?
Well, you got to take that on a case-by-case basis to some extent.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. And I think the way I approach it is just kind of look at the big picture first and then drill down into the details. So, obviously the main page contains the rankings, and those are based on the offensive and defensive efficiencies for each team. And so those two things are really important. But they don't really tell you how a team gets to be good offensively or poor offensively. So there you just drill down into what we call the four factors. And from there you're looking at shooting and turnovers and rebounding and free throws. Those basically explain everything about your offense and defense. And once you see where a team, is strong or weak in those areas, I think you really get a much better feel for kind of the personality of how a team plays.
And everything is on a case-by-case basis because, for example, I'll check out, I'll give you an example. A team may be 45% of their offense are twos and maybe 39% are threes, and then free throws minimal along the way, you'll say, hey, look, you know, you're slowing down their three-point game. You're doing something because they're not a, you know, they don't get a lot of offense from two. So you're right. It is a case-by-case basis along the way. When you put it together, which, you know, which, let's talk offense for a moment, then I'll go to defense. On your offensive numbers, I just watched Iowa, which is twice in 9 days, which is a top 10 offensive team. Who are some of the top offensive teams in your rankings when you go through it?
Well, this season, it's, you know, the number one team in the country right now is Purdue.
Yep. Shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, and kind of a, you know, similar personality to Iowa, you know, to some extent. Like, they're really good offense, and the defense holds them back a little bit. They're, you know, a better team than Iowa, but if they're going to reach, you know, Final Four national championship type goals, their defense will have to improve. So it's them. It's Gonzaga's number two, Kentucky's third, Kansas is fourth, Baylor's fifth. I mean, those are your, yeah, your top five offenses in the country right now. So I think what's interesting is that you kind of look historically, and there's a little bit of a trend towards, you know, we say defense wins championships, but really,
I'm glad you brought this up. I'm glad you brought this up because that's a great point, and it's something I've talked about, and Dick and I have talked about. In football, what has Alabama done? Alabama has been going with big time offense in recent years. I'd say the last couple of championships that Nick Saban's had may have been his, quote, weakest defensive teams. I'm seeing the same thing in college basketball. Is that what you're seeing over and over again, that, hey, you put up some points? Like, we say all the time, the good teams aren't in close games.
Right, for sure. And, you know, the bottom line is, like, great offense tends to beat great defense, you know. Guys are making shots, you know, how often do you see it? You know, guys are making contested shots, you know, the defense is doing everything it can, and the ball still goes in. And, I mean, it's not to say the defense doesn't have any influence on that. These are subtle trends, but especially as you get later into the season, shooters get better, and you just can't win, you know, with a dominating defense alone. And really, this year, it seems like that trend is even more obvious. You know, so many of these top teams have great offenses and maybe, you know, good defenses, but they're really being driven by their offense. So it's kind of an interesting trend I'll be following here the last few weeks of the season and then into the tournament.
Yeah. So let's now flip it. Who are the top five defensive teams in your ratings right now when you put together all the numbers?
Yeah. So top team right now is LSU, who's
Penn State.
A bit of a skid.
Penn State played. Yeah, they played in the tournament.
Yeah. And it's VCU, San Diego State, Texas Tech, and Boise State.
Okay, so Penn State was supposed to play VCU, and then that game got canceled because of COVID.
But. Yeah, but yeah, it's striking. You know, those top five teams. I mean, they're good teams, but it's not quite a who's who of the top of college basketball like the top offensive teams are right now.
All right, so let's take another one. Pace. Penn State is a team that is, I want to say, I don't know, they could be, what, 347, 352, somewhere in that range in pace right now. We know Virginia's always going to be down there. Penn State's got Wisconsin coming up on Saturday, Ken, so there aren't going to be a lot of possessions.
Right.
Along the way. Does pace, when you look at your top five teams in pace, are those the ones that are scoring the points, or is there a correlation between them?
Yeah, so I mean, if you're looking at like the final score, you're gonna see those teams. They do, you know, have higher final scores. That doesn't necessarily mean their offense is better on a per possession basis.
Right.
Yeah, it's there's not a good correlation there. What is interesting this year, though, is that two of the top three teams in pace are Arizona and Gonzaga.
Yeah.
And Gonzaga, you know, for years under Mark Few was not exceptional in terms of their tempo. They're pretty average. But last 3 or 4 years, they've accelerated. And then, of course, their top assistant, Tommy Lloyd, took the Arizona job this year. And
right.
He has brought that system to Arizona. So you have two very effective offenses that are very fast-paced, which is kind of unusual. And I do want to point out on Wisconsin, though, The pace this year ranks 199th, Steve. So
yeah, they're a little bit better because you know, the reason is because Johnny Davis plays with more pace, right? And Tyler Wall plays with a little more pace. And I think that does make a difference. You're right. Because I thought that was one of the big changes Bo made when Bo was the coach. You know, they'd be grinding it down 57 possessions a game. You notice when they got to the Final Four what they did? Because he had NBA players. He had Kaminsky, he had Decker. Suddenly, out of nowhere, they started scoring over 80 points. So, Bo, back before he left, started thinking that way.
For sure. And, I mean, the national runner-up team just had a phenomenal offense as it was. So, even playing at a, uninspiring pace, if you're scoring a point and a quarter per possession, that's really good in college basketball, and you're still gonna look pretty solid on the scoreboard.
Let me ask you about this, because there are possessions per game, but you have it down as adjusted tempo. So what does that mean? So if somebody subscribes to that adjusted tempo in terms of possessions, there's possessions, but there's adjusted tempo. What does yours mean?
Yeah, the adjusted tempo basically takes into account who you play. So it tries to kind of figure out what pace do you want to play at.
Yeah.
So if you're, especially if you're playing in a conference with a bunch of slow teams or a bunch of fast teams, whatever. But if you're playing a conference with a bunch of slow teams and you want to play fast, like the other team obviously has the ball half the time, so they can drag down your pace more than maybe you prefer. So the adjustments try to account for that.
Now, this is serious, but Dick Girardi and I always find it comical. When your score predictions, based on everything you put in, are just so ridiculously close all the time. Our running joke has been privately, not on the air. We haven't done that on the air. Is that we feel like a certain entity in the desert is reading your material. Did you ever get that feeling?
Yeah, I've heard things to that effect. I think certainly like 10 to 15 years ago, there was more truth to that. You know, there weren't a lot of other options around to get predictions. And so I think once people realized I had a pretty decent system, like, there was some influence on what the folks in Vegas were doing, and I don't know how it works now. I assume that there's just so much money in this that they have a little bit more sophisticated system than I do. But
why did you start doing score predictions on this? Dick and I find it fascinating, so that's why, we'll always check, like I always can say, 77-74, what's the final? 77-73. Oh, wait, blew that one. But why did you decide to start doing that?
Well, it was just kind of all part of the mission of the site, really, for me. You know, there's 350-plus teams in college basketball, and I like predicting the future. And so I just wanted a nice reference just to know, hey, this team's playing this well right now. Here's what their future schedule is. You know, if we make some predictions about future games, how will they, how will they look at the end of the season? So I just like predicting things, and I think it's just useful information if you're trying to get a gauge on a team that you don't know a whole lot about.
When the NCAA Tournament Committee puts out its 68, how do you sit there and watch that, because you know what your numbers say, and do you sit back and go, okay, I don't understand why they're a seventh seed because my numbers say they should be a four?
Well, it's, there's a little bit of a conflict there because to me, so first of all, my system is, it's trying to make predictions. So, people kind of, when they're new to it, they get a little confused because I'm not like, my system doesn't care necessarily how many quad one wins you have or things like that.
It's right. Looking at yes.
How you played and
yep.
There's a lot of influence with scoring margins. So, it's trying to make predictions going forward and not reward you for accomplishments, which is really what the tournament selection process should be about. That should be rewarding you for compliments. Even if you were skating by with a bunch of close wins, as long as you're winning games, like that should be what matters. So I don't get too wrapped up over, hey, this team should be seated here or there. I do think about, this team is kind of a sleeping giant. Like, they play pretty well this year. They lost some close games to some good teams, and they're obviously undefeated because of that. But now that they're in the tournament, they can do some damage. Those are the kind of thoughts that I have.
Okay. Don't have to say who if it happens. But do certain members of the committee ever quietly get in touch with you about things?
They don't, actually. I can honestly say.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah.
I can't wait to tell Dick this one.
No, the only time I really ever interacted with members of the committee is either in some sort of, you know, official meeting at the NCAA, or, you know, I just run into somebody at a game, you know, an athletic director is on the committee or whatever. And they might have some questions at that point, but no, I've never been contacted, really, you know.
You gotta be kidding me.
From the selection rumors.
Okay. You have to remember, we're two people that we prep games. And to be honest with you, there's critical parts of your preparation. Going to practice is critical. Watching film is critical. You know, knowing personnel critical. But then when it comes time to break down numbers, your site is critical to what we do. Okay? Full disclosure. Is there anything over the years that you added that you thought was important and anything you deleted because you just realized it wasn't important?
Yeah. I mean, you know, over the years, you know, I've just added a few things here and there. I mean, the one thing, I guess the best story I can tell about adding something is, you know, 10 years ago or so, Chris Holtman, who's the, you know, head coach at Ohio State, he was coaching at Gardner-Webb at that point, or
I think so. Yeah, that sounds right. Yep.
Yeah, and he.
Then he went from there to Butler. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was, this was like right before he got to Butler, I think he was there as an assistant first and then took over as head coach, right? He was looking at his team's tempo and it was kind of slow. And he was like, Ken, we don't play that slow. Like, there's something wrong with your calculation. And so what I did was I ended up splitting up tempo basically into offense and defense. You know, what's your average possession length offensively and defensively? And kind of looked at that. And sure enough, like, you know, Gardner-Webb was like actually pretty fast on offense, and they just slowed people down defensively, which is kind of, you know, what most coaches probably want to do. And
right.
So I was like, oh, you know what? I always had that information kind of in my back pocket, never put it on the site. Like, you know what? I'm just going to put this on the site.
Yeah.
So people like Chris Holtman can see this and don't have to complain about it. And anyway, that got added to the site like 10 years ago. And to me, that's like, you know, really useful just to kind of see you know, another dimension of a team style, not just one number for their pace, but like, you know, like Penn State's a great example where they, use a lot of shot clock on offense, but actually defensively, they don't slow it down. Like teams, you know, play kind of an average pace against defense. So you can kind of see that breakdown, and sometimes it's pretty interesting.
Right. It is, and I'll give everybody an example because you can historically go back on Ken's site and can see what a team has done. So Micah Shrewsbury was an assistant coach with Brad Stevens at Butler when they went to the Final Four. So it was actually Dick that did this. He went back to look. Adjusted tempo in the year, I think it was the year Gordon Hayward hit the shot off the flange. The adjusted was 59 point something. And you never felt like Butler was playing slow, but that was just what the adjusted number was. And Penn State right now is at 62. So, you know, it's kind of pace that he has seen before as a coach.
Yeah, that's the one thing, too. Like, when I'm doing preseason projections, you know, the offense and defensive projections are basically like kind of, you know, looking at your personnel and who you brought back and who you lost. But the pace projection is like entirely who's coaching the team. Like, there's some coaches, you know, that change from year to year. I mean, I mentioned Mark Few kind of has made some adjustments in recent years. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you look at a coach and what they've done like the last 5 to 8 years in terms of their team's pace, and that's like what you're going to get the next year. Like, it's very much a coaching driven metric and very stable. You know, 2 to 3, 4 games into the season, once you see a team's pace, like, you kind of know what they're going to do the rest of the year.
And then Greg Gard's 199. All right, I got it. Get you know what? You know, I now have that locked in for Saturday at 6. All right, Ken, an absolute pleasure. I always love talking to you. You know that, and appreciate you very much.
Well, thanks for having me on, Steve. I always enjoy our chats and enjoy the rest of the season. It should be a fun finish.
Look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks, Ken.
All right, thank you.
Ken Pomeroy, KenPom.com. We'll wrap it up in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors on News Radio 1070 WKOK. on this Wednesday. Our thanks to Dave Ritchie, who stopped by today. Kevin having Shikellamy game tonight at Central Mountain. I appreciate the Chief being on today, and John Crispin, Tyler Donahue, and Ken Pomeroy. So we have more coming up on the show this week. And you know, we talked a little bit about the Brian Flores lawsuit. And you just don't want to be somebody they just bring in because you feel like they're just forced to bring you in to interview you or waste your time and their time, and everybody's just doing it to complete an exercise. I was stunned he was fired by the Dolphins from 30,000 feet. I don't know the Dolphins organization at all. But I couldn't believe he got fired. He'd done everything you can ask for. He wanted to get into coaching, so he got into scouting with the Patriots. He then asked Bill Belichick to see if he could be a part of the staff and coach. He got special teams, defensive coordinator, winning organization, gets the Dolphins job, and does way better than anybody thought he would. But there's also an allegation in here that he makes about being offered money to not win games. And Hugh Jackson, who was with the Cleveland Browns, where he won a total of 3 games, says it's not unfamiliar territory to him. Everyone knows how I feel about tanking. If you're going to play, you play to win. And if those teams are tanking, if they prove, this is beyond what Brian Flores is in the lawsuit, but if they were to prove tanking, they should lose an entire year of draft choices if you're deliberately trying to lose. Now, Flores wasn't. Flores bucked the trend. He won.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.